If you think the interesting part of Aaron Burr's story ended after his duel with Hamilton, you're in for one heck of a sequel. Welcome to American Esoterica. If history class gives you the end of the first act, this is the show-stopping musical number. The essential stuff in between. The personalities, events, and other ephemera that shape our history and culture. I'm Brian Powers. If Aaron Burr hadn't already gone down in history as a pariah for his duel with Alexander Hamilton, what came next might have cemented his infamy even more. We'd be talking about him in the same tones as Benedict Arnold. Because what he did next was crazy by any standard, and the duel was just the beginning. Of course, it probably actually started before the duel. During the election of 1800, Burr ran for vice president alongside Jefferson, but both received the same number of electoral votes. Under the system at the time, the top vote-getter became president and the runner-up became vice president. Rather than concede and give the election to his running mate, Burr saw his chance at getting the whole prize, and he stood by during 35 votes of the House of Representatives that came out deadlocked. This was a sign that his loyalties may lay only with himself, and Jefferson never trusted Burr again. When Jefferson informed Burr under the "fool me once, shame on you" doctrine that he wouldn't be on the presidential ticket in 1804, Burr decided to run for governor of New York. Hamilton, horrified at the prospect, did his best to successfully sink Burr's chances. A bitter Burr began biliously to break the beneficial bonds that had brought him his big break. He started plotting to achieve the power he felt he was owed. And after winning the duel with Hamilton failed to revive his political career, yes, he really thought it would, he turned against his own country. Wanted for the murder of Hamilton in New York, he traveled to Washington, D.C. to serve out the remainder of his term as vice president, where he was immune from prosecution. And his position gave him access to effectuate his evil plan. Jefferson had just purchased the Louisiana Territory from France in 1803. In Burr's mind, it was there for the taking. It was perfect. Ill-defined borders and a dispute with Spain over a large portion of the land meant that there was chaos to take advantage of. Burr had also heard that there was plenty of secession talk among the newly minted American residents, ripe for exploitation. Burr's first move was to conspire with General James Wilkinson, commander-in-chief of the United States Army, as the two went all the way back to the Revolution. Wilkinson was entirely without scruples, which made him the perfect conspirator. Burr convinced Jefferson to name Wilkinson as governor of northern Louisiana, which was the perfect cover for Wilkinson to move about the territory and drum up support for the conspiracy. Seeking stronger backing, the month after the duel, Burr quietly reached out to the British minister to the United States, offering his assistance to Britain to help them peel off some or all of that Louisiana purchase land. All he wanted in return was ships and resources with which to conquer the territory. The British government failed to respond to the deal, so Burr decided to go it alone. After the end of his vice presidential term, he headed west to gather intelligence for himself, dropping hints about his plans and recruiting allies such as Harmon Blennerhassett, an eccentric Irishman who had built a mansion on a small island, Blennerhassett's Island, that he owned in the Ohio River near Marietta, Ohio. It was here that Burr created the encampment for his new army. In New Orleans, Burr befriended a group of businessmen who wished to see territory taken from Mexico. Burr returned to Washington, only to find that not only had word of support from the British not arrived, his plans had been trickling back east, even getting noted in newspapers. That's kind of what happens when you tell your conspiracy to everybody. Burr shrugged it off and continued preparations. Spain was pushing back on the borders and laying claim to much of the newly acquired territory, which gave Burr and his forces the perfect opportunity. Jefferson would order Wilkinson and his army to Louisiana, and Burr and Wilkinson could use it as pretext to conquer new territory in the name of the United States, but to actually be ruled and controlled by Burr. Ready to act? Burr wrote the whole thing to Wilkinson in code in what became known as the Cipher Letter. As Burr continued clumsily putting his conspiracy into place throughout Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee, he attracted the attention of a whole lot of people. The prosecutor for the United States Court in Frankfort, Kentucky, brought treason charges against Burr three times, but none of them stuck. One of the co-defendants was John Adair, who would go on to become governor of Kentucky. By this time, near the end of 1806, Wilkinson could see the writing on the wall. Burr was a liability, and his plan to carve a new nation out of the Louisiana Purchase in Mexico was a flight of fancy. He chose to save his own butt. Wilkinson explained the plan to Jefferson in a letter, and although he didn't name Burr, he didn't have to. Jefferson immediately gave the order to find Burr and bring him in. On December 9, 1806, an Ohio militia seized all of Burr's boats in Marietta, and they raided Blennerhassett's island 2 days later. Most of the army Burr had raised there escaped down the river in advance of the raid. Blennerhassett's mansion was fully ransacked. When Burr returned, anticipating an army raised in his name, he came upon Blennerhassett and less than 100 men carrying news of the raids. This is the moment that a reasonable person might have realized that the plan was over. But not Aaron Burr. He and his considerably small army headed for New Orleans, picking up stragglers along the way. The turning point finally came about 30 miles north of New Orleans in a town called Bayou Pierre. Burr stared with disbelief at the New Orleans paper someone had brought to him. Printed there was his full decoded cipher letter, along with a notice of an award for his capture. It was over. Burr surrendered and faced a grand jury, which failed to return an indictment. Fearing that he was still going to be railroaded, Burr escaped and ran to the woods. A month and a half later, a muddy, bedraggled, bearded former vice president of the United States was captured by federal soldiers and brought to Richmond, Virginia to stand trial for treason. The cipher letter was the key piece of evidence, but in the end, it was Supreme Court Justice John Marshall's view of the Constitution that spared him. Burr's actions did not meet the very strict definition of treason in that document, so Burr was acquitted. Burr packed up his crazy and fled to Europe, where he spent his time over the next 4 or 5 years trying to sell Britain and France on the idea of invading parts of North America. Unable to make the sale, he came back to New York and settled into a life of obscurity in private law practice, changing his last name to obscure his identity. Broke and scheming, he married again later in life to one of the richest women in New York, Eliza Jumel. But she began divorce proceedings just 4 months in, after Burr began using her assets to buy property in Mexico. His death made the divorce final, but Eliza may have hastened it through her choice of collaborator in the divorce. It's a little unclear what role this collaborator played. Some say he was her attorney, but it was likely just a hair less poetic. See, Eliza needed a reliable friend to whom she could temporarily unload her land to shield it from Burr during the divorce. Someone she could trust to return it to her after. She found the perfect partner, too. Someone more than ready and willing to help her screw over murderous, treasonous, greedy old Aaron Burr. Someone by the name of Alexander Hamilton, Jr. This has been American Esoterica. All sounds were made by me, Brian Powers. Did I get it wrong? Did I get it right? Just want to talk about how Eliza Jumel needs her own episode? Drop me a note. The address is yell@AmericanEsoterica.com. More information on this show and its episodes can be found at AmericanEsoterica.com. Thank you for listening, and God bless America.